Frank and Conrad emerged into a garden at the back of the house. The carriage Diamond Jack had provided was still parked in front, but they would be running too great a risk of being caught by the police if they tried to reach it. They would have to find some other way to get to Lanigan's house. With a sinking feeling, Conrad realized he didn't even know where that was. He knew the location of the Golden Gate Saloon in the Barbary Coast, but that was all. A large, menacing shadow loomed over them, and they turned swiftly, bringing their guns up.
Mr. Browning, Mr. Morgan, please come with me.
Conrad wasn't surprised to see the big hatchet man in the fancy garden behind the Nob Hill Mansion. Somehow, he had a habit of popping up wherever he was most needed.
What in blazes are you doing here?
Conrad lowered his gun.
Wong Duck sent me to report on what happened here tonight. I heard shots, then saw Lanigan, his wife, and a number of gunmen pretending to be waiters flee from the mansion. My feeling was that if you and Mr. Morgan survived the battle, you would take your leave this way, rather than risking running into the police.
Your hunch was right about that. I found out Lanigan's been pretending my children belong to him and his wife. Wait a minute. Your boss knew I was looking for my kids, and with the way he keeps tabs on Lanigan, he must have known that Lanigan and his wife have twins. He must have put that together, but he didn't tell me about it. Why would he keep that from me?
It is not my place to question Wong Duck's actions or his motives.
Never mind. I could figure it out for myself. He was counting on me losing my head when I found out about the twins. He thought I'd react by starting a fight, which is exactly what happened, and he hoped Lanigan would be killed in the ruckus. But it didn't work out that way.
We must go. The police will be here soon.
All right. But Diamond Jack and I are going to have some words about this when it's all over.
Ling Yuan gestured with a ham-like hand at the path that ran through the garden. The three of them hurried along the path until they made it to a steep, narrow street, and quickly vanished into the darkness.
You realize I'm risking my reputation for you.
Claudius Turnbuckle handed the gun belt to Conrad. He had gone to the Palace Hotel to get it after a Chinese messenger had shown up on his doorstep with a note from Conrad. Ling Yuan had arranged that without much difficulty.
The police are looking for you.
Am I wanted for anything?
Conrad buckled on the gun belt and felt the familiar, comforting weight of the Colt revolver in the holster. He had discarded the cravat, but still wore the suit. Its dark color made it easier for him to blend into the shadows outside the big estate belonging to Dex Lanigan.
No charges have been brought against you, yet. The police merely want to question you about the shooting at the Kimball Mansion. But you can't expect to disrupt such an affair and have bullets whizzing about the heads of the most important people in San Francisco without getting into trouble for it.
The shooting wasn't our idea. Lanigan's men started that particular ball.
That may well be true. Still, I expect some complaints to be filed against Conrad at the very least.
But not by Lanigan.
No. Despite what you said he threatened, he won't go to the police. He can't stand to have the authorities delving too deeply into his business, even his personal affairs.
Arturo had accompanied Turnbuckle from the hotel when he found out the lawyer was engaged in an errand for Conrad. The four men stood in deep shadows under some trees along the street, a block away from the Lanigan house. Ling Yuan was scouting around in an attempt to find out just what sort of situation they were facing.
This fellow Lanigan probably has at least a dozen hardened killers in there to protect him and his family. You can't hope to simply break in and take the children from him.
Ling Yuan said we could get as many men from Diamond Jack as we need, but that's too dangerous. We can't risk the children being hurt in an all-out battle like that. Anyway, I'm not sure I trust Diamond Jack anymore, if I ever did. He knew where the kids were, and he didn't tell me. He was using me to kill Lanigan so his hands wouldn't be dirty.
He's a crook, after all. Can't expect the hombre to be doing something out of the goodness of his own heart.
Maybe not, but I still don't like it.
If you don't intend to attack the house, what are you going to do?
I was thinking that if Frank and I can get in there and get our hands on the kids...
You'll be charged with kidnapping and sent to prison, more than likely.
The woman really seemed to care for them. I think we can persuade her to tell the truth. If she'll admit to the deal she made with Pamela and to the deal Lanigan made, the police won't have anything against us. The twins are my children, and I have a right to them.
What will wind up happening is the whole thing will be thrown into the courts. The children won't be turned over to you immediately, Conrad. This is going to take time.
Well, at least they won't be living with a criminal like Lanigan anymore. And eventually everything will come out and they'll be with me.
I wish I had your faith. In my experience, most often anything that can go wrong will go wrong.
Not tonight.
Before they could discuss the situation further, Ling Yuan came out of the shadows.
There's a carriage house in back. Something is going on in there. I believe a team is being hitched to a vehicle, and several horses are being saddled as well.
Lanigan's not fording up here. He's about to make a run for it.
So it appears to me.
We have to stop him. Where's he going to go?
Lanigan has a hunting lodge in the mountains east of here, on the other side of the bay. He must think he and his family will be safer there.
It's not his family. Claudius, you and Arturo stay here. Ling Yuan, take Frank and me to this carriage house.
Sir, are you sure you should?
I haven't come this far and gone through so much to let them slip away from me now. Not when I'm this close.
Then we best not waste any time.
He and Conrad followed Ling Yuan toward the rear of the estate that sprawled across a hillside overlooking the bay. The view would be pretty during the day, but there was nothing much to see at night. The fog blotted out the lights of the town on the other side of the water. A brick wall surrounded the house and its grounds. Ling Yuan led Conrad and Frank to a wrought iron gate in that wall. On the inside was a drive made of crushed stone that ran to the carriage house. Yellow light glowed through the windows. Suddenly, the big double doors in front of the carriage house swung open. Light slanted out onto the drive. Two men on horseback came out, followed closely by the team pulling an enclosed carriage.
They're coming. We have to stop them.
Best split up. We'll wait on opposite sides of this gate. Once they get it open, we can jump the carriage before it goes through.
Conrad motioned for Ling Yuan to go with him. They hurried to the left side of the gate and waited with their backs to the brick wall, while Frank went to the right side and did likewise. Conrad drew his gun. Chances were, Winifred Lanigan and the children were inside the carriage, so he and his companions would have to be very careful. They couldn't just blaze away at Lanigan's men. The risk was too great that a stray bullet might hit one of the twins. Every shot was going to have to be painstakingly aimed. The men on horseback rode well ahead of the carriage. When they reached the gate, one of the riders swung down and went over to the wrought iron barrier. He unlocked the gate and swung it open. Conrad moved fast, darting through the opening and taking by surprise the man who had unlocked the gate. The gun in Conrad's hand rose and fell, hitting the top of the man's head. He collapsed, out cold. Still mounted, the second man was ready for trouble. Conrad felt the heat of the bullet pass his face. Frank shot his gun, and the man on horseback clutched his shoulder as he swayed in the saddle. The horse bolted, dumping it.
Run them down!
The driver did his best to follow that order. He brought the team into a hard gallop, making the carriage lurch back and forth as it barreled along the drive. Conrad thought about shooting one of the lead horses and piling up the team, but the carriage might overturn and crash. He couldn't risk it. Several riders had been following the carriage, and they spread out to the sides, opening fire as they galloped toward the gate. Conrad and Frank returned those shots without having to worry about hitting the children. One of the gunmen spilled out of the saddle with a hole bored in it, a slug from Frank's .45. Another doubled over as one of Conrad's bullets struck him. He managed to stay mounted, but his horse veered off wildly. That left two men on horseback. They pulled back behind the racing carriage. The vehicle was almost on top of Conrad and Frank. They had failed to stop it, and they had to leap aside to avoid being trampled by the charging team. As the carriage rolled through the gate, a large dark shape soared into the air from the top of the wall, swooping down almost like a giant bird. Ling Yuan's daring leap carried him to the roof of the carriage. He caught hold of the brass railing around the edge to keep from falling off. Conrad was about to lunge for the carriage, too. But the horse of a gunman struck him with a glancing blow with its shoulder and knocked him off his feet. Bullets kicked up the crushed rock of the drive as they landed only inches away from him. He rolled away from the bullets and came up in a crouch, firing his Colt at the rider who had just tried to ventilate it. The man's arms went wide as the bullet tore into his throat and blew out the back of his neck. Conrad came to his feet and followed as Frank ran out through the open gate to stare along the street. Conrad hoped to see the carriage a block or so away where Ling Yuan had stopped it, but the vehicle was gone.
They got away. They're gone.
Somebody's coming. Is that the Chinaman?
Ling Yuan ran up the street toward them. He held his upper left arm with his right hand. Dark worms crawled between his fingers. Conrad knew they were trails of blood.
How bad are you hurt?
It is nothing. A bullet straight through my arm, and it did not strike the bone. But when Lanigan shot me while I was trying to get the reins away from the driver, it was enough to make me fall off the carriage.
So they got away.
But we know where they're headed, more than likely. That hunting lodge in the mountains. How do they get there?
The ferry across the bay. That would be the fastest route.
Then let's get to that ferry. Maybe we can still stop them.
The three men ran toward the spot where they had left Claudius Turnbuckle and Arturo. Turnbuckle had come to the rendezvous in a buggy, and Conrad and Frank would use it. Turnbuckle and Arturo emerged from the shadows under the trees.
Good Lord! What happened here? We heard all the shooting and didn't know if you three were dead or alive.
We're alive, but Lanigan got away with his wife and the twins.
Blast it! What now?
Frank and I are going after them. We think they're going to take the ferry over to the other side of the bay. Lanigan's bound to be headed for that lodge of his.
How do we get to the ferry landing from here?
Quickly, Turnbuckle gave them directions. Conrad remembered enough about San Francisco to be fairly certain he could follow them without any trouble.
Ling Yuan's wounded. Take care of that while Frank and I go after Lanigan.
Conrad and Frank ran toward the parked buggy half a block away.
We'll meet you at your office later, Claudius!
It was a wild ride, up and down the hilly streets and across town toward the bay. Conrad handled the reins, and Frank hung on for dear life. Through the fog, Conrad saw the lights on the clock tower of the ferry building at the Embarcadero and steered toward them. The wharf used by the big ferry boats that plied the waters of San Francisco Bay was lit up, too. During the day, several ferries steamed back and forth almost constantly between San Francisco and Oakland, but at night there was only one boat in use.
I don't see the carriage!
Conrad wheeled the buggy onto the wharf.
Maybe they didn't come here after all.
Where else could they go? Lanigan's on the run. He's not going to stay here in San Francisco.
Conrad brought the buggy to a lurching halt in front of a small building on the wharf where a light was burning. He jumped down and ran to the door. Frank was right behind him. The building housed the small office of the wharfmaster. The main offices of the ferry company were in the big building behind them. The man on duty was middle-aged and had a drooping mustache. He looked up from the paperwork spread out on his desk as Conrad and Frank burst into the little office.
When's the next ferry?
45 minutes from now.
One just left, didn't it?
10 minutes ago. You and your friend want tickets on the next one?
Was there a fancy carriage on board, the one that just left?
Well, say, how'd you know that? Friends of yours? Well, sorry you missed them if they were.
No, not friends. Family. Some of them, anyway.
Conrad slumped into an empty chair just inside the door, trying not to give in to the feelings that gripped him. If the ferry wouldn't be back for its next run for 45 minutes, that meant it would be well over an hour before he and Frank could reach Oakland to pick up the trail, giving Lanigan plenty of time to make his getaway. A glimmer of hope came to Conrad.
Let's go.
Well, you don't want them tickets?
Conrad stalked out without answering.
Where are we headed?
Back to Claudius's office. We have preparations to make.
That fella Diamond Jack knows where Lanigan's lodge is, I'll bet. I reckon we're going hunting, aren't we?
Yes. We're about to do some hunting.
The Diablo Mountains, one of the coastal ranges, rose on the eastern side of San Francisco Bay, behind the settlements of Oakland and Berkeley. As mountains go, they weren't particularly tall or rugged. But their wooded slopes provided a haven for some of San Francisco's wealthiest citizens who wanted a place to get away from the city. It was certainly appropriate they were named after the devil, Conrad thought the next morning, as he watched the far side of the bay come closer from the railing of the boat Claudius Turnbuckle had chartered. Dex Lanigan might not be the devil himself, but he had made a diabolical deal with Pamela Tarleton. Since they were leaving the city, Conrad was dressed for more rugged surroundings. He wore boots, jeans, and a buckskin shirt without any fancy fringe on it. A broad-brimmed brown Stetson was on his head. He had the Colt on his right hip and the Smith & Wesson 38 tucked away in a holster at the small of his back. He had a Bowie knife sheathed on his left hip and cradled a Winchester in his left arm. Frank came up to the railing beside him.
Lanigan's liable to have the local law up there on his side. Remember, he has the San Francisco police convinced you're loco and dangerous.
I know.
Don't tell me where you're going. I don't want to have to lie to the police if they question me again. And it's likely they will. The captain of the boat doesn't need to know either. It's bad enough he can tell the authorities he dropped you on the other side of the bay.
Don't worry, Claudius. As far as you're concerned, you don't know a thing about what we're going to do.
I'm not worried about myself. I just don't want to have to tell the police anything that will hurt your chances of getting those children away from Lanigan. For what it's worth, I'll be filing this suit this morning, seeking to have the adoption set aside as being illegal because of fraud, and asking that custody of the twins will be awarded to you.
How long will that take?
Turnbuckle's silent shrug had been answer enough.
If you get your hands on those kids, you aren't going back, are you?
Put them through a long, drawn-out court case where they might be considered wards of the state and forced to live in an orphanage until things were decided? No. Claudius can fight it out in the courts. Little Frank and Vivian and I will be somewhere and nobody can find us.
You'll be making a fugitive out of yourself, and them too.
Do you think I should do things differently?
Don't go by me. I've been a fugitive plenty of times in my life. Just because the law is the law doesn't mean it's always right. But it is still the law, and it's not a good thing to have after you.
I'll risk it. For the sake of those two youngsters, I'll risk anything.
The boat belonged to a fisherman Turnbuckle had represented in a court case. The man wasn't wealthy, like most of Turnbuckle's clients, but the lawyer took cases like that from time to time. He had prevailed in court, and the fisherman owed him a favor. He had agreed to ferry Conrad and Frank across the bay and drop them off in a secluded cove south of Oakland. A pair of horses would be waiting there, also arranged by Turnbuckle. There had been no sign of Ling Yuan or any of Diamond Jack's other men. Conrad figured the Tong leader was sitting back and waiting to see what was going to happen. The fishing boat chugged into the cove, close enough for the captain to run aboard to the shore. Trees grew almost to the edge of the water. The pair of horses were tied up about 20 yards into the woods, as Turnbuckle had promised. Frank took the big bay, Conrad the thick-chested dun. Ling Yuan had drawn them a map to Lanigan's hunting lodge. Conrad wondered why Diamond Jack hadn't had Lanigan killed before now. He supposed it was because such an assassination might trigger an all-out war between the Tongs and the white underworld of the Barbary Coast. If, on the other hand, Lanigan were to be killed by a couple of white men because of something that had nothing to do with the saloon owner's rivalry with the Tongs, then Diamond Jack could claim he'd had nothing to do with it. That might be enough to avoid an orgy of bloodshed that could seriously cripple both factions. They came to a narrow trail that Ling Yuan had marked on the map.
Lanigan's place is about 5 miles up in the mountains. This trail is supposed to lead us around behind it. According to Ling Yuan, Lanigan doesn't know it exists.
I wouldn't count on that. Lanigan struck me as being pretty sharp. I'm not sure he'd have a back door into his place that wasn't protected.
We'll just have to be careful. This won't be the first time I've snuck into somewhere that was guarded, and I'll bet it won't be for you either.
You'd win that bet.
They rode on, following the trail that was so faint sometimes it was hard to see, even for a veteran frontiersman like Frank. They didn't lose it, though, and their route gradually took them upward, higher into the mountains. The trees thinned out some, but were still thick enough to provide cover. Because the route twisted back and forth to avoid natural obstacles, they wound up traveling much farther than 5 miles. Hours passed as they climbed toward their destination. Eventually, Conrad came out on a shoulder that curved around the mountainside. He reached a spot where he could dismount and crawl forward to look over the edge of a bluff. The roof of a sprawling, two-story log building nestled in the trees was visible below. That would be Lanigan's Lodge, according to Ling Yuan's map. The place matched the hatchet man's description, right down to the small barn and corral off to one side. Several horses were in that corral, including the 6 matched blacks that made up the team for Lanigan's carriage. Conrad had no trouble recognizing the horses. They had almost trampled him the night before. 2 men, armed with shotguns, stood near the lodge's rear door. Conrad spotted 2 more roaming through the trees. He figured there would be more guards in front of the lodge, and maybe on the sides of the sprawling building. There were bound to be gunmen inside the lodge, too, along with Lanigan, Winifred, and the twins.
I don't know who you are, mister, but if you move, I'll blow your brains out. You work for that Browning bastard?
No, I am that Browning bastard.
Conrad rolled over and saw Frank lowering the limp body of an unconscious man to the ground.
Figured there'd be somebody keeping an eye on this spot. You drew him out just like we thought you would. That was quite a risk you ran, though. He could have shot you in the back.
No, I figured you'd be curious about who I was and try to take me prisoner. Are you sure there was just one guard?
Pretty sure. After we split up, I circled higher and got above this shoulder. Had a pretty good view of the hombre sneaking up on you. He appeared to be alone.
All right.
Conrad glanced at the sky. It had taken them most of the day to climb to the lodge, and night would be falling soon.
Once it's dark, we can climb down that bluff and try to make it into the house.
Those shotgun toters will probably have something to say about that.
So will we.
Frank slapped Conrad on the shoulder.
It's good working with you again, son.
Likewise. Just don't expect me to start calling you Pa.
Conrad and Frank kept a close watch all around them as they waited for night to fall. it was possible another guard might come to change places with the man Frank had knocked out and tied up. No one else showed up, though, so Conrad suspected the shift change had taken place not long before he and Frank had sprung their trap on the luckless gunman. They were up high enough on the western slope of the mountain that the sea was visible in the distance. Finally, the sun sank into the Pacific, turning everything green and gold for a brief moment of beauty and tranquility. That couldn't last. It would be a night of blood and death, Conrad sensed. But as long as his children wound up safe, that was all that really mattered.
I didn't see any badges or uniforms on those men standing guard. I think we can assume they're all hired guns working for Lanigan.
There's bound to be a trail leading a long way around. That'll be how the guards get up here. Once things have settled down, one of us can come back and get the horses. Then we'll ride out on that road we spotted leading through the trees to the lodge.
Frank, if I don't make it out of here...
I'll see that those youngsters are taken care of. You don't even have to ask.
I know.
Same goes for me. Just don't tell them too many wild stories about their gunslinging granddad.
I'll keep them away from those dime novels.
We may have to kill Lanigan and the rest of those varmints. I reckon you can live with that, though, the way you went after the man responsible for Rebel's death.
Yeah. This is the last hand, Frank. Pamela's down to her last card.
You realize you're talking about gambling with a dead woman?
That's the way it's been all along. Pamela's twisted game. I just didn't realize it soon enough.
If we get those kids back safe and sound, it's soon enough.
Conrad couldn't argue with that. He went to the edge of the bluff, which was steep but rugged enough a man could climb down it if he was careful, even in the dark. Brush grew here and there, which helped provide handholds. The bluff was about 50 feet high. Conrad and Frank took their time descending it. They didn't want to dislodge any rocks and send them clattering down the slope to warn the guards. Stealth was more important than speed. They had all night to make their approach to the lodge. When they reached the bottom at last, Conrad put his mouth next to Frank's ear.
We'll take the guards who are patrolling first. You go left, I'll go right.
Got it.
Frank had been good about letting the younger, less experienced man call the shots, Conrad thought. At the same time, he knew if he was about to do anything really stupid, Frank would stop him. Maybe it was just a matter of great minds thinking alike, Conrad told himself with a faint smile, as he cat-footed through the darkness. As he made his way through the trees toward the lodge, he paused every few feet to listen. After several minutes, he heard what he was looking for. Standing stock still, he waited until he was sure which direction the roaming guard was moving. Then he slipped to the side so his path would intercept that of the gunman. Drawing his bowie knife from its sheath, Conrad stopped and pressed his back against the trunk of a tree. A moment later, the guard walked past him, unaware that he was there. Conrad lowered the limp corpse to the ground and moved toward the house. Frank should have taken care of the other roaming sentry, and they still had to deal with the men guarding the door. Trees around the back of the house had been cleared away for a distance of 30 or 40 feet, and a couple of lanterns hanging on each side of the door cast a yellow half-circle of light over that area. Conrad couldn't get close enough to strike with the buoy without being spotted, and he doubted his ability to throw the knife with enough power and accuracy to kill one of the guards. Even if he did, that would leave another guard to sound the alarm.
Hey, Toby! Lunsford, get out of here! I caught somebody trying to sneak up on the place!
A shock went through Conrad as he realized that was the other patrolling guard. From the sound of it, he had taken Frank prisoner. The guards by the door reacted instantly, running toward the trees, shotguns at the ready. Conrad moved fast too, circling swiftly through the pines toward them. He had to help Frank, and it was a chance to deal with those two guards without having to approach them across the open ground. The hired guns ran into the trees.
What the hell?
Conrad darted around a tree and saw one of the guards trying to swing his scattergun around to aim it at a shadowy figure. Knowing the guard was an enemy, Conrad lifted his knife and brought the brass ball on the end of the handle down hard against the back of the guard's head. The man stumbled forward as the shotgun's twin barrels drooped toward the ground. The shadowy figure leaped forward, grabbed the barrels, and forced the muzzles into the dirt. His other fist smashed into the guard's face and knocked him loose from the weapon. The guard toppled to the ground, out cold.
Good teamwork.
I thought you'd been captured.
Yeah, well, that's what I wanted those fellas by the house to think. The idea came to me when I jumped the one who was patrolling out here. Instead of killing him, I put my bowie to his throat and made him call out to those two and lure them out here. I walloped one with my gun. I thought maybe you'd show up and give me a hand, and sure enough...
Where's the other guard? The one you used as bait?
Frank gestured toward a shape on the ground nearby.
Knocked out, tied up, and gagged. He won't give us any trouble. We'd better do the same with these two.
Working quickly, they cut strips from the guards' shirts and used them to bind the men securely, as well as for gags to keep them quiet. That left the back door of Lanigan's lodge unguarded. Conrad and Frank took the pistols worn by the unconscious guards. Having extra shots without needing to reload might come in handy. They walked quickly through the lantern light to the door and pressed their backs to the wall as they listened for any sounds of alarm. Everything was quiet. Evidently, their approach hadn't been noticed. Conrad reached over and tried the latch. He swallowed a frustrated curse as it refused to budge. Looking over at Frank, he mouthed the word, locked. They would have to find another way in. Frank leaned back and looked up. Conrad followed suit. The roof overhung the door and slanted up to darkened windows on the second floor. Frank pointed up with his thumb, then bent over and formed a stirrup with his hands. Conrad nodded. He weighed less, so it made sense for him to go first. Putting a booted foot in Frank's hands, Conrad stepped up and reached for the overhang. Frank heaved him up. Conrad's hands closed over the edge, the rough shingles providing a good grip. He hauled himself up, and Frank pushed from below. Conrad cleared the edge and rolled onto the sloping roof. Once he was there, he unbuckled his belt and slipped it out of the loops on his jeans. After wrapping the tongue end around his hand a couple of times, he lowered the buckle end to Frank, who grasped it with both hands and started climbing up the wall. In a few seconds, Conrad was able to reach down with his other hand and catch hold of his father's arm. He pulled Frank onto the roof. They sprawled on the shingles for a few moments to catch their breath. Then Conrad sat up, put his belt back on, and moved on hands and knees up to the nearest window. The room on the other side of the glass was dark, and he hoped unoccupied. He tried to raise the window, but it wouldn't move. It was fastened shut. Frank went to one of the other second floor windows and tried it, then looked over at Conrad and shook his head. Chances were they were all that way. Conrad took off his hat and drew his gun. Using the hat to muffle the sound, he rapped the gun butt sharply against one of the panes, just hard enough to crack the glass without shattering it. He pouched the iron, put his hat back on, and took out his knife. He got the tip of the blade into the crack and started working it back and forth gently. The work was tedious, but it was important to be as quiet as possible. After several minutes, he managed to loosen a big piece of glass enough that he could get his fingers into the crack around it. Being careful not to slice his flesh open on the sharp edges, he worked the piece of glass back and forth some more and finally pried it loose from the window. Conrad set the glass aside and reached into the room through the opening he had created. He felt around at the bottom of the window until he found the catch that held it closed. Thankfully, the window hadn't been nailed shut. He slid the catch over, pulled his arm out, and eased the window up. Conrad went through the window first, with Frank following him. Once inside the house, it was a matter of finding the children and making sure they were safe before dealing with Lanigan and the rest of the man's hired guns. The odds were still steep against them, but that was nothing new for Conrad Browning and Frank Morgan. Walking softly, they went to the door, which they could see dimly in the faint lantern light filtering into the room from outside. It appeared to be a bedroom, but no one was sleeping there at the moment. Conrad tried the door. The knob turned easily in his hand. He and Frank stepped into a corridor. A staircase landing was a few yards to their right. The stairs led down into a big room filled with heavy rustic furniture, dominated by a huge fireplace with a massive stone mantel. A fire was lit in that fireplace, casting a garish, flickering glow over the man who stood in front of it with a drink in his hand. Dex Lanigan. Conrad looked around the room. He didn't see Winifred or the children, or any of Lanigan's hired killers, for that matter. The man appeared to be alone in the room. The way Lanigan stared pensively into the flames in the fireplace seemed to confirm that hunch. Conrad and Frank glanced at each other. Taking Lanigan prisoner would give them the upper hand. They could force him to turn over the children, then take him as a hostage until they were safely away from the lodge. Moving as quietly as they could, Conrad and Frank started down the stairs. They had just reached the bottom when Lanigan turned abruptly from the fireplace toward them. They lifted their guns, but Lanigan didn't seem to be surprised to see them. He didn't drop his drink and try to claw out a weapon of his own. He just smiled.
I was expecting you.
Don't move.
Conrad looked at Lanigan over the sights of his Colt.
And don't yell for your guards.
Or what? You'll shoot me? What good will that do you? I have a dozen men who'll be here in a heartbeat if they hear a gun go off. The only reason they're not in here already is because I want to talk to you, Browning.
We don't have anything to talk about, except for you telling me where my children are, so Frank can go get them while I keep you covered.
Your children. Your children. You damned fool. You don't have any children.
An ugly feeling had begun to crawl around inside Conrad as soon as he realized Lanigan wasn't surprised to see them. It was like a snake in his belly, and it told him something was very, very wrong.
Little Frank and Vivian, or David and Rachel, as you call them. You know good and well who I'm talking about.
Oh, I know. But that doesn't make them your children. They're not here anyway. They're back in San Francisco with their mother.
That was like a fist in Conrad's gut. Every instinct he possessed told him Lanigan was telling the truth, about that part of it anyway. The saloon owner had set a clever trap for him and Frank, and they had fallen into it. It hadn't even occurred to him that Lanigan might have left the children behind.
Pamela Tarleton!
You're about to tell me Pamela Tarleton is the twins' mother, aren't you? How can you be so sure of that?
I was at the sanitarium in Cambridge where they were born. I talked to Dr. Futrell.
Are you saying Futrell couldn't have been paid to lie to you? I knew Pamela Tarleton, I don't deny that. When she set out to either destroy you or make your life a living hell, however it worked out, she tried to think of every possible contingency. She's always been two steps ahead of you, Browning.
You're lying through your teeth. Pamela went to that sanitarium.
With her maid, who was about to have a baby but had no husband to go with it. I probably shouldn't talk this way about the woman, who's now my dear wife. But at one time in her life, she was rather free with her favors. When she found herself in the family way, played right into her employer's hands. Pamela hatched the idea of making you believe the child was yours. As it turned out, there were two babies. But that just doubled the misery for you, didn't it?
Conrad's pulse began to hammer inside his skull. He didn't want to believe the things Lanigan was telling him. But deep down, he knew it was possible. Pamela could have done it all. Fixed things so it looked like she had the children at the sanitarium rather than her maid, written the letter to be delivered to Conrad after her death, acted like she was the twins' mother during the cross-country journey rather than Winifred, struck a bargain with Lanigan to marry Winifred and take in the children, knowing if Conrad made it through all the death traps to San Francisco, he would jump to the conclusion that the twins were his. All along, for months, he had played right into the hands of her twisted scheme.
How do I know this isn't just one more of Pamela's clever lies you're telling me?
You don't. That's the beauty of it, Browning. You're gonna die not knowing for sure.
Lanigan looked up at the top of the stairs behind Conrad and Frank and nodded. Lanigan's nod was enough to warn Conrad and Frank. They were moving even as the guns began to blast, and their superb reflexes flung them apart, Conrad going left and Frank going right. Conrad landed on his shoulder, rolled, and came up on one knee with the Colt in his right hand and one of the revolvers he had taken from the guards filling his left hand. Two of the men staggered, stumbled, and doubled over as Conrad's bullets tore into them. Another man went down with blood welling from the hole in the center of his forehead where one of Frank's shots had caught him. Frank lay on his belly on the other side of the staircase, firing upward. The gunmen retreated, driven back by the deadly accuracy of their intended victims. As the shooting entered a momentary lull, Conrad glanced over his shoulder toward the fireplace. Lanigan was gone. He had ducked out and left his men to deal with Conrad and Frank. Conrad turned back to Frank and saw that a slug had creased his upper left arm.
How bad are you hit?
I've cut myself worse shaving. Anyway, it's not my gun arm.
Suddenly, men rushed into the room from right and left. Conrad and Frank were facing each other, so they fired past each other, downing the gunmen coming at their backs. The shooting stopped again, and Conrad and Frank took the time to reload. Conrad figured the surviving gunmen were debating what they should do next. If they charged down the stairs, they would be easy targets. On the other hand, if he and Frank moved away from the wall, they would be back in the line of fire. It was a standoff, and Lanigan was still out there somewhere.
Frank, do you think Lanigan was telling the truth? About the twins, I mean.
I just don't know. Sounded like it could have been that way, all right. You knew Pamela Tarleton a lot better than I ever did. Was she smart enough and loco enough to come up with a plan like that?
She was. And evil enough, too. But that would mean everything that's happened over the past few months, all the danger I put you and Claudius and Arturo in, all of it was for nothing. I did just what Pamela wanted me to do, like I was her puppet.
Blast it, that's not the way it was at all. Whether those kids are yours or not, you believed they were, and you acted accordingly. You acted like their father, and what you felt was real.
But if they're not mine, then it was all a lie.
All those fellas who tried to kill you were sure enough real. This trap Lanigan set for us was real. And so is the score we have to settle with him.
Yeah. I guess when the bullets are flying, it's best to save the philosophical debates until later.
You could say that. Now, are you ready to have it out with those hombres?
More than ready.
Then I'll draw them out, and you finish them off.
Before Conrad could ask his father what he meant by that, Frank darted away from the wall and twisted around. He started firing both guns toward the balcony along the second floor. More shots came from above as the gunman returned the fire. Frank staggered, but stayed on his feet and kept shooting.
No!
Conrad dived into the open, turning his body in midair so he landed on his back. From where he lay, he could see all three gunmen standing at the balcony railing and firing down at Frank. Conrad raised his weapons and aimed at the men on the balcony. All three of the hired killers collapsed. Conrad scrambled to his feet. He wanted to rush over to Frank, who had fallen near the fireplace, but he had emptied his guns, and one thing Frank had taught him was to reload as soon as possible after a gun battle. Conrad holstered the .38 and started plucking .45 rounds from the loops on his gun belt. Only when he had a loaded weapon in his hand again did he hurry over to Frank and drop to one knee. Conrad rolled Frank onto his back and saw blood on his right trouser leg, as well as on his shirt. Frank opened his eyes.
You get him?
Yeah, I got him.
Figured you would, if I drew him out.
How bad are you hurt, Frank?
Oh, not bad, just creased a few more times. I'll be fine.
Frank lifted a hand and clutched Conrad's arm.
Yeah, help me into a chair, and then you go and go find Lanigan.
You need me to patch up these wounds?
Not yet. I'll bet Lanigan's still around here somewhere. You find him, settle up with him.
Conrad nodded. He had lived most of his life unaware of Frank Morgan's very existence. The thought that Frank might not be around made Conrad feel like he couldn't catch his breath. He lifted Frank and settled him into one of the big armchairs. Conrad reloaded his father's gun and slipped it into Frank's hand.
Just in case I didn't kill all those varmints and one or two still have some fight in them.
Don't worry, I can handle them.
I know that. I'll be back.
He checked through the lodge quickly, but found no sign of Lanigan. That gave him a chance to check all the bodies and confirm the hired killers were all dead. There was also no indication Winifred and the children were there, or had ever been there, for that matter. Lanigan had been telling the truth about that, anyway. Conrad returned to the big main room.
Lanigan's gone. But you don't have to worry about any of those other men. They're done for.
I wasn't worried. Lanigan may still be waiting around outside to see what happens, or he might have lit a shuck away from here. But maybe you can find him or pick up on his trail.
You'll be all right?
Better than all right. Now that I know I'm not going to have to duck bullets any second, I can tie up some of these creases myself.
Conrad nodded. He went out the front door carefully, with his gun up and ready for trouble. Lamps on the porch cast a wide circle of light in front of the house. His eyes scanned the landscape around the lodge carefully, but he didn't see Lanigan anywhere. The road leading up the mountain from the bay ended in a large area covered with gravel. Conrad looked it over to see if he could find any fresh hoof prints, but he didn't spot any. Gun in hand, he turned toward the dark barn. Lanigan might be hiding in there, waiting for some of his gunmen to come to him and report that the intruders were dead. Conrad was about 20 feet from the open doors of the barn when a mounted figure suddenly exploded out of them, spurring straight toward him.
Die, Browning!
Lanigan had a gun in his hand. Conrad threw himself aside to keep from being trampled or shot full of holes. As the galloping horse pounded toward him, Conrad dropped his gun and lunged, reaching for Lanigan as horse and rider flashed by. Conrad caught hold of Lanigan's leg and dragged him off the horse. Lanigan toppled out of the saddle and crashed to the ground, his gun flying through the air. Conrad stood over the man.
Get up! Get up, Lanigan! We'll have this out, you and me.
Lanigan started to climb to his feet, then drove forward in a diving tackle that caught Conrad around the knees. Conrad went down hard, and Lanigan plucked the Bowie knife from the sheath on his left hip. Twisting, Conrad pushed him off to the side, quickly getting back to his feet. When Lanigan got back to his feet, he quickly lunged out with the Bowie. Conrad caught Lanigan's wrist just in time to stop the man from plunging the blade into his side. With the Bowie temporarily out of play, Conrad hooked a punch with his other hand into Lanigan's belly. Lanigan stumbled, off balance. Conrad gave Lanigan's wrist a hard twist, caught hold of his shoulder, and rammed his own body forward against the gambler. The collision sent 12 inches of cold steel slicing into Lanigan's gut. Conrad had managed to turn the knife so it was pointing at Lanigan before they crashed together. Conrad let go and stepped back. Lanigan swayed, his fingers still wrapped around the Bowie's handle.
Lanigan, is it true? What you told me about the children, is it true? You've got nothing to lose now by telling me.
Lanigan was looking down at the knife handle protruding from his belly. Slowly, he raised his eyes to meet Conrad's gaze. Suddenly, blood spilled from his mouth. His eyes opened wide, but no longer saw anything. He pitched forward and lay on the ground motionless, curled around the blade that had ended his life. Conrad stood looking at the dead gambler when he caught a glimpse of motion from the corner of his eye. He turned his head and saw Ling Yuan standing there.
It is done.
Yes, it's done. Diamond Jack's dirty work is done for him, so he won't have to go to war against the rest of the Barbary Coast. That's what he wanted all along, isn't it? You've been lurking around here, haven't you? You've probably got a dozen more hatchet men hidden in the trees. If Frank and I had failed, you'd have killed Lanigan and made it look like one of us did it. But now you won't even have to go to that much trouble. We took care of it for you.
Is Mr. Morgan all right?
Conrad jerked a thumb toward the lodge.
He's in there, shot up a little, but he'll be fine.
His wounds will be cared for. We will bring you your horses and help you get back to San Francisco.
Conrad started to respond angrily and tell the man they didn't need his help, but he changed his mind. Might as well get something out of this whole mess, he thought.
Fine. I've still got business to take care of in San Francisco.
Conrad took Claudius Turnbuckle with him when he went to Lanigan's house the next morning. Frank was back at the hotel being looked after by Arturo, who seemed glad to have something to do again. They stepped down from Turnbuckle's buggy.
Are you sure you don't want me to get Patrick Dugan and some of the other detectives who work for me? Lanigan may have left guards with orders to keep you from getting to his wife.
If he did, I'll handle them. I'm not sure they'll want to risk it when they find out Lanigan's dead.
Mrs. Lanigan may call the police.
If she does, I'll be gone before they get here. I have to know, Claudius.
Of course you do, lad. Of course you do.
Wait here.
Conrad went up the walk, through the lush grounds, to the house. When he reached the porch, he was surprised to see the door stood open a few inches. He hadn't changed clothes since the battle at Lanigan's hunting lodge the night before, and his Colt was still in its holster. His hand went to his gun as a bad feeling came to life inside him. He pushed on the door. The inside of the house appeared to be dark and quiet. He stepped into a richly appointed foyer.
Is that you, Mr. Browning?
Winifred Lanigan, he thought. At least she was still alive. Conrad drew his Colt as he moved into the sumptuously furnished room. Heavy drapes were drawn all over the windows, making it almost as dark as night. His eyes adjusted quickly, and he made out the figure sitting in a chair next to a fireplace. A large portrait hung over the mantel. Conrad's gaze flicked to it and saw four people, two adults and two children. A family portrait, he thought bitterly.
Mrs. Lanigan.
You won't need that gun. Dex left men here, but I sent them all away. They didn't want to go, but I insisted. I knew either he or you would come, and I have nothing to fear from either of you.
Your husband's dead.
I know. I knew as soon as you came in. I had a feeling that's the way things would turn out. When I saw you at the Kimball Mansion, I could tell you were the sort of man who wouldn't allow himself to be turned aside from what he wants. I'm sorry to say you can't have what you want, Mr. Browning. It doesn't exist.
Then it's true. what your husband told me about the children.
David and Rachel. My children. Yes, it's true. I knew Dex would tell you if he could. He planned to gloat about it before he killed you. Oh, he was an evil man. That's why he was so well matched with Miss Tarleton. They should have been together. They were meant for each other.
You sound like you didn't love him.
You don't have to love someone to be married to them, Mr. Browning. Sometimes it's just enough to be taken care of.
You could be lying to me right now, just like your husband lied to me.
I could be, but you've never seen them, have you? David? Rachel? Come down here, please.
Conrad's breath caught in his throat as he heard the sudden clatter of small footsteps on the broad staircase leading down from the second floor into the foyer. He turned. He had left the front door open, so there was enough light for him to see the boy and girl who came down the stairs and stopped in the entrance to the parlor. They were beautiful. Thick, dark, curly hair, clean, innocent features, strong, sturdy bodies, keen, inquisitive, intelligent eyes. The sort of children any man would be proud to call his own. But they weren't his. That knowledge burned into his soul like a brand. No matter how hard he searched their faces, he couldn't find a trace of resemblance to either him or Pamela. When he looked back at Winifred Lanigan, he saw her in them. There was no doubt about that.
Yes, Mama?
The little girl looked up at Conrad.
Who are you?
Children, this is Mr. Browning. He's come a long way to see you.
To see us? Why?
I came to tell you what fine children you and your sister are. David, I've heard so much about you, and now I see that it's true.
Both children looked at him like he had lost his mind. Maybe he had.
Why don't you go back upstairs and play while I talk to your mother some more?
They looked at each other and shrugged in the way children have of saying all grown-ups are crazy anyway, then turned and ran back up the stairs. Conrad swung around to face Winifred Lanigan across the parlor again.
Thank you. It's going to be hard enough for them over the coming weeks and months.
She lifted something from a small table beside her chair and held it out.
Here, this is for you.
It was a thick envelope. Conrad crossed the room and took it from her.
What's this?
Give it to Claudius Turnbuckle. I've written down everything, going all the way back to Boston before any of this started. I've explained everything Miss Charlton did, as well as Dex's part in it. And mine. It should be enough to clear your name with the authorities.
Why would you do such a thing? Feeling guilty?
Of course. Wouldn't you if you'd helped torture someone the way Miss Charlton and Dex and I tortured you? But I won't lie to you. If Dex had come through that door this morning instead of you, I wouldn't have said anything about this. I'd have burned what I wrote as soon as I got the chance, and I wouldn't look back. It would have been too late for that. I would have already been damned. Maybe this way.
All right. Thank you.
You don't have to thank me. Not after what I helped them do to you. This is a start. Just a start.
I'll be going now.
She nodded, but didn't reply. He turned and went to the door, but paused there and looked back at her.
You have a fine pair of children.
I know. Sometimes we're blessed in ways we don't really deserve.
Conrad nodded. That was true. And sometimes we're damned in ways we don't deserve either, he thought, as he left the house and walked toward Claudius Turnbuckle's buggy with the confession in his hand.
Where are you gonna go?
Don't know. Thought maybe I'd just drift.
But, sir...
Not sir. Pard, maybe. That'll do.
Really, Conrad?
Don't know the man. My name's Kid Morgan.
Oh, my God. You can't just turn your back again on who you really are. All the charges against you have been dropped. There's no reason you can't return to your old life.
The kid took hold of the reins, put his foot in the stirrup, and swung up on the dun's back. His Winchester was snugged in the saddle boot, and he had a fully loaded pack horse with him, carrying plenty of supplies and ammunition. He looked down from the saddle.
You'll see to it that the woman and her kids are taken care of?
Of course. Just like you wanted. But I don't understand.
Life punishes some folks enough by itself. You know what I mean, Frank.
I do.
The kid reached down and shook hands with Arturo.
I'll be seeing you again one of these days.
I sincerely hope so, sir. I mean, pard.
There's nothing I can do to talk you out of this, is there?
The kid just smiled. He lifted a hand to the brim of his hat as he turned the horse. He heeled the dun into motion and rode away. The three men watched until he vanished down the busy street.
I just don't understand it. Where is he going?
Someplace where nobody's ever heard of Conrad Browning. Someplace where the bullets are flying and there's powder smoke in the air, more than likely. Someplace where he can forget what he lost and what he never really had. Too bad he'll never find it. But sometimes the only salvation people can grasp is in the looking.
The Loner, Book 11, Crossfire, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2011, J.A. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Ken Jackson, Eric Messner, Michael Glenn, Casey Platt, James Konacek, Dylan Lynch, Kimberly Gilbert, Thomas Keegan, Stephen Carpenter, Tim Carlin, Tracy Oliveira, Gregory Gorton, Terence Aselford, Yasmin Twazan, Tim Getman, Alyssa Wilman, Tim Pabone, David Coyne, Mort Shelby, Joe Brack, Danny Gavigan, Bradley Smith, Evan Casey, Richard Rowan, Scott McCormick, and Daniel Sontag. Additional red shirts by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Nathaniel Perry. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers, James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing, graphic audio sound design, and book adaptation by Nathaniel Perry. The Loner theme was composed by Nathaniel Perry, with additional original music by Johann Detweiler and Nathaniel Perry. If you enjoyed The Loner, be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Cotton Pickens, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our action-pumped titles, as well as free downloadable extras, audio guides, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of another thrilling title in Graphic Audio.
What is the meaning of this?
No, Galatinov will leave this place alive.
You goddamn dogs!
Mother! Run, Mikhail! Run!
Get the boy!
Father?
I'm not your father, boy. Why do you persist in calling to ghosts?
Oh, you want to go home?
You are home.
Lieutenant Colonel Vogt, please come in.
I don't have much time. Field Marshal Rommel is waiting. I assume these are up to the minute?
Yes, sir.
We'll all toast the success of Panzer Army Africa on the banks of the Nile. Heil Hitler.
Mein Gott.
Help me! Help me!
Kill it!
Hold up! Hurry! We've got to stop that beast! Go!
Shall I wait here, sir?
Yes, for now.
So Gallatin served with distinction in North Africa? That was 2 years ago. If he's been out of service since then, what makes you people think he can handle the job?
Because Major Gallatin is a professional. Major?
Come in.
Couldn't have picked a more desolate place, could you?
I couldn't find one. I am retired.
But, sir, can we at least brief you on what the mission involves?
All right.
There's an American agent in Paris.
Adams, his code name.
Your intelligence boys got a coded message from Adam a little more than 2 weeks ago. He said there's something big in the works. He was being watched, and he had information that had to be brought out of France by personal courier.
By 90 days after D-Day, we're planning on having more than 1 million boys over there to kick Hitler's ass. And we'd sure better know what's in the Nazis' hand.
Death. I'm sorry. Find someone else.
But sir...
I said I retired.
Let's talk, Michael.
Yes, sir.
Michael, I want you to go to Paris.
Is it that vital?
Yes. If the Gestapo is watching Adam so closely, you can be certain he has information they don't want getting out. With your, special talents, there's a possibility you can get in and out under the nose of the Gestapo.
All right. But my parachute training's rusty.
Major! We're screwed! You want to scrub the drop?
I'm going!
Welcome to France. You'll be leaving grand entrances, don't you?
Any entrance I survive is grand.
We have to get you to a safe place. Are you ready to run?
Always.
From international best-selling author Robert R. McCammon, a compelling tale of espionage and supernatural horror. The Wolf's Hour. In rich, vibrant, graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.